This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. This is the second in a two-part Newsmakers series on the issue of abortion, as the U.S. Supreme Court is expected any day now to issue a decision that might overturn Roe versus Wade. Last week, we spoke with pro-life advocates. You can find that program on wisci.org. Today, we're sitting down with pro-choice leaders who will be sharing their concerns about what might happen next in Wisconsin if federal protection for a woman's right to an abortion is removed. We're sitting down with Representative Lisa Subek, a Democrat from Madison, and Nicole Safar, who is a lawyer and a longtime reproductive freedom activist. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Lisa, back in January, you were at an event celebrating the 49th anniversary of that landmark Roe versus Wade decision, and you predicted that Roe would not see a 50th year. That Supreme Court decision might be coming down even as, you know, this week. How are you feeling now?
You know, certainly when I made that prediction, I hoped I would be wrong, and I still hope that I'm wrong. Given what we have seen in the leaked draft opinion, I really do fear the worst. I think that it is very likely that Roe will be overturned, potentially in full. And the results of that will be devastating for the women of Wisconsin. It will mean that abortion will be illegal in Wisconsin, and that physicians who help somebody get an abortion or others who help someone get an abortion could be subject to felony penalties, could serve prison time, could be subject to fines for providing abortion services. And that, of course, is thanks to a law that's been on Wisconsin's books since 1849.
We'll be talking more about what's in that law. Nicole, if Roe is overturned, abortion law setting and deliberation moves to the state level. Why shouldn't abortion law be deliberated at a state-by-state level?
You know, I think that policy decisions should be deliberated at a state level, and it makes a lot of sense when we're talking about the laws that govern us that our state representatives, like Representative Subek, have a say in that process. I really find that argument to be disingenuous, that, you know, we're going to a status quo of where the states can decide these issues about our individual ability to really be free in America and in Wisconsin. And it's
a place for federal policy then?
It is
national policy?
For federal policy. And this issues about the freedom to decide when and how to create your family are so personal to ourselves and how we live our lives. There are certain freedoms that we all expect, the freedom to be able to vote, the freedom to create our families, the freedom to marry who we choose, the freedom to get an education, the freedom to be safe in our communities. These are at the core of what it means to be an American, and it is what we rely on our federal government to protect by interpreting the Constitution.
So if Wisconsin voters feel differently than, say, Texas voters, you're saying the policy should be the same across the country?
I think that there are certain core freedoms that we all should have in America, and it should not matter on what your zip code is or where your state, what state you're located in. Yes.
So abortion has become more rare over time in Wisconsin. Those numbers have been trending down since the late 1980s. We're showing some data from the state of Wisconsin in 1988. Wisconsin recorded nearly 18,000 induced abortions compared to about 6,430 in 2020. The estimated induced abortion ratio, the number of reported induced abortions per 100 live births, that ratio was 10 per 100 live births in Wisconsin in 2020. That was consistent with what was in 2019. Last week, as I mentioned, we spoke with pro-life advocates, and they are taking credit for that decline in numbers, saying it's a sign of all the work they've put into restricting abortion access. How do you describe or account for those declining numbers?
Yeah, I'd say certainly the restrictions that were put into place have made it harder for individuals to access abortion, but they haven't made the need for abortion go away. In the same way that making abortion fully illegal isn't going to eliminate the need for abortion care, there will still be unintended pregnancies, there will still be untenable pregnancies. And as Nicole said, I mean, it really is an issue of your basic freedoms to be able to make these decisions about how and when you have children, how and when you start a family. I do think that one of the things that has helped people be able to make those decisions is access to birth control. And sadly, some of the same folks who are fighting access to abortion have fought tooth and nail to restrict access to birth control, somehow equating it to, you know, sort of being part of their quest. And I think that that's unfortunate because part of being able to exercise that freedom of deciding when and if you are going to have children does mean you need access to the tools to be able to plan your family. You need access to the information. We could do a better job with comprehensive sex education. Sadly, the Republicans in the legislature repealed our Healthy Youth Act and took those tools away from young people. All of that said, though, regardless of how much access folks may have to the tools they need to plan their families, there will still be a need for abortion. People will still find themselves in a place where they have either a planned or an unplanned pregnancy that they can't continue to term. And certainly, it is not the business of us as politicians to make that decision for them. It's the business of individuals.
You, Representative Subic, you mentioned that if the court overturns Roe, that Wisconsin is one of 22 states that either has a constitutional amendment or a law on the books that will almost immediately, if it goes into effect, immediately ban nearly all abortions. Wisconsin's law from 1849 includes only exceptions for the life of the mother. We're looking at some of the text from that law on the screen right now. It says, any person other than the mother who intentionally destroys the life of an unborn child is guilty of a Class H felony. Goes on to say the penalties do not apply to an abortion performed by a physician or advised by two other physicians to save the life of the mother, and it defines an abortion or an unborn child as a human being from the time of conception. Pro-life advocates say that if this law goes into effect, that medical advances have, you know, that are so different and so advanced since 1849 that it'll be very rare that either the mother or the child loses their life. They talk about the maternal mortality rates that are being exaggerated. What do you think? How do you respond to that?
You know, I think that this is an issue. I mean, the bottom line is one day someone that you love, someone that I love will need an abortion. That is just statistically, that's true. Yes, healthcare has gotten so much better. I feel like maybe we're on a throwback to 10 years ago, Lisa. Like, the single biggest thing that has made a difference in abortion rates in this country is the Affordable Care Act. It is women having access to better forms of birth control, women having access to preventative health care. That is what has decreased the unintended pregnancy rate in this country.
Do you think more women will die if abortion is banned in Wisconsin?
Yes, I do. And
so those numbers are not exaggerated. It could become a crisis. Are you saying that?
It is a crisis. It will become a crisis. And it will not be the same crisis that we saw in, you know, the pre-Roe era. It will be women whose bodies cannot sustain a healthy pregnancy that are in the hospital at 24 weeks. It will be, you know, women whose get preeclampsia in right after the first trimester. This is going to be a health crisis for someone that you know today.
And that exception for the life of the mother is not adequate. Doctors won't be able to save those women.
Well, first off, imagine being in the hospital in a life or death situation and having terminating the pregnancy being what will save your life and having your doctor say, wait a minute, I need to get two more doctors to confirm this. That's horrifying in and of itself. But also, this leaves out exceptions for the health of the mother. I mean, somebody who is pregnant and facing a dangerous pregnancy may have irreparable health damage. And there is no option for them to take a look at their situation and make a decision under this law. Somebody who is a survivor of rape or incest. Imagine an 11-year-old girl who's been a victim of incest having to carry a pregnancy to term because our law doesn't allow an exception for her.
Pro-life advocates say that exemption isn't necessary because the data shows that rape and incest account for less than 1% of all abortions.
Regardless of the number, there are people who are raped. There are people who are survivors of incest who do get pregnant and who do seek an abortion. And shouldn't it be their choice, not the choice of a bunch of politicians, to decide whether or not they can and will carry that pregnancy to term?
That 1849 law identifies life beginning at the time of conception, and that seems to be at the center of the abortion debate. When does that life start, and then how to balance the life of the mother with what some also consider to be that life. Where is that line for you?
For me personally?
As a reproductive rights advocate.
That line is where any pregnant person decides that it is, and it is different for every single person that experiences an unintended pregnancy or experiences a health crisis. It is not my role to say where that line is. It is up to each individual person to make that decision about what is best for themselves and for that family, their family. And I think it is so disingenuous for people to talk about this 1849 law that was passed during a time where women were not a part of the conversation. Black folks were considered chattel slavery in most of this country during that time. Black people, the LGBT community, indigenous people, indigenous women were not a part of the conversation. And we're talking about going back to a law that protected the freedom of only white property-owning men. Like, that is an outrageous place for us to be in this state. And I think that the people of Wisconsin agree with me. When you have a conversation with someone and really let them know about this law that was, you know, that's, what, 170-some years old, people are shocked, and then they are outraged, because this can't be what it means to live in America today.
Representative Subic, does one of those lives have more value?
You know, these are really personal and individual decisions that people need to make. And I could bet that if I talked to three or four different people, they would not all arrive at the same decision for themselves and their family. The reality is, though, that's where that decision belongs. These are decisions that should be made by the family, their physicians, and their faith, their support systems. It shouldn't be made by politicians. And certainly, you know, as Nicole said, this is a law that's been on the books since well before women even had the right to vote. We just celebrated 100 years of women having the right to vote. And yet this law far predates that. I think that in and of itself speaks volumes. It speaks to who, you know, who is this law set out to serve, but also whose autonomy and whose freedom was considered in these decisions. It certainly wasn't the freedom of women.
Last week, Governor Evers signed an executive order asking the legislature to come back into session, and he's focused on repealing that 1849 law that we've been talking about. Let's hear what Governor Evers had to say at that event.
Now, I know this is going to be a tough fight. I know that because for three state years I've had a ringside seat to the attacks on reproductive health care, and I vetoed every one of them. And today I'm asking Wisconsinites in every corner of our great state to join us in making their voices heard. So, folks, we have a lot of work to do, and a lot of it. In the next 2 weeks, the people of Wisconsin need to make their voices heard, call and write their legislators, and then we need every person to talk to their friends, family members, coworkers, neighbors, and we need to share our stories about what this decision means and how it could affect our daily lives and their daily lives, and then we need them to call their legislators. This isn't about politics. This is about the will of the people.
The governor says that he thinks that Republican legislators need to hear from their constituents, that they should make calls. What are you hearing from your constituents on this issue?
Certainly my constituents are worried. They're worried about having their basic freedom to make these decisions taken away from them. And I think that is true across the state. Certainly, I don't hear only from my own constituents, but I hear from folks across the state who are concerned about this issue. The numbers bear out. Most Wisconsinites support keeping Roe v. Wade in place. Most Wisconsinites do not want abortion to be illegal.
And this is an election year. We're heading into midterm elections in November. Do you think this issue, Nicole, will make a difference in the way people vote in November?
I do think this will make a difference. I think that what we are seeing play out, if the if Justice Alito's draft becomes the real opinion and abortion is banned in Wisconsin and I think up to 26 other states, this is going to be, and it should be, an issue that people talk about at the ballot box. I mean, we are not bystanders to how our laws are interpreted in Wisconsin. We elect not only our governor and our attorney general and our state representatives, we elect our judges, we elect our district attorneys, we elect our state Supreme Court justices. And this will be something that voters, I think, will come together and mobilize around.
Recent polls, as you mentioned, Representative Subek, show Wisconsinites support, or rather don't support, overturning Roe v. Wade. The Marquette Law School poll shows a little bit more nuance when it comes to how and when people believe abortion should be banned or legal, and we're showing some data related to that. The May national poll shows a majority of voters oppose the bans that would apply at any time during a pregnancy. After 6 weeks, 65% oppose. Opinions nearly evenly split between support or oppose an abortion ban after 15 weeks, 65% support an abortion ban after 6 months. That fetal viability data from the medical community says that a fetus can survive outside of the womb at 23, 24 weeks. Is there a point in a pregnancy, I'll ask Nicole first, is there a point in a pregnancy where an abortion should not be allowed?
Again, I think that these arbitrary timelines are not what's at issue. What's at issue is this is a decision for a pregnant woman to make in consultation with her healthcare provider, with her family, with her faith. It is not for you or me to say where that line is. And every single person who goes through this experience is going to have different life experiences and religious views and economic circumstances and support and different healthcare needs. And it is up to them to decide what is the best decision to make.
Representative Subek, do those poll numbers matter?
I'd say it speaks to just how individual and personal a decision this is. People's views vary because this is something that is very individual. At what point will an individual consider having versus not having an abortion should they face certain circumstances is different in every single case. Every pregnancy is different, and every decision on whether to carry that pregnancy to term or not is different. And it does boil down again to who should be making that decision. And I want somebody who is facing a pregnancy to be able to make that decision. I don't think that it should be me. I don't think it should be the governor. I don't think it should be the Speaker of the House, Robin Voss, who makes that decision. Certainly, that's a whole batch of folks I don't want to see in my OBGYN's office. And I want to see us recognize just how complicated healthcare is. Abortion is part of healthcare, and individuals need to make individual healthcare decisions.
Attorney General Call says he won't enforce this law, the 1849 law, if it goes into effect. Should a law enforcement official, a sworn law enforcement official, be allowed to choose which laws to enforce?
Attorney General Call is going to be on the ballot, and I think the voters will speak about that. I fully expect that he will be reelected, and I certainly think this will be one of the issues that is part of the discussion and the debate throughout this election season.
Nicole, I know you're a lawyer. You formerly worked for Planned Parenthood. A lot of people say if that law goes into effect, that it will immediately head to the courts for a challenge. Do you believe that to be the case?
I think for decades we have relied on the courts to step in and protect our freedoms. So I understand why that is a strategy people are considering right now. I think today that is not the best tool that's available to us. The Wisconsin Supreme Court and obviously the U.S. Supreme Court are hostile to reproductive freedom. There needs to be structural changes to our federal court system to really repair the infiltration of right-wing judges that have thwarted the will of the people in so many parts of this country. These right-wing judges do not respect the law. It's why a precedent like Roe, which has been sustained, I think, still more times than any other precedent in the Supreme Court's history, is going to be completely eviscerated. Like, that is not the rule of law. We need to repair and strengthen the federal court system. And in Wisconsin, we elect our judges. We elect our state Supreme Court justices. So we need to fix the court systems, and that should be a huge focus of what we do.
That will take time, though.
It will take time, yeah. And we are in absolutely an emergency situation. But we have to be smart and strategic and use the tools that are going to lead to success. And I think that we shouldn't take a case to court that we know is hostile,
That reproductive rights advocates will challenge this 1849 law in court?
I certainly can't suppose to know what folks will do. I think it's certainly there's a pattern in the past of challenging laws like this in court.
Do you agree that that's not necessarily the best way to go?
I do agree. I mean, first off, I think we should repeal our 1849 law, and absolutely. I've been fighting hard and working hard to do that for years now in the legislature. We have offered bill after bill to do that. Unfortunately, in our overly gerrymandered legislature, we have not been able to.
And Is there any reason to think that that can happen now?
You know, I would say we're entering an election season. We have an election coming up in November, and I have long said if you can't change their minds, change who occupies that seat. And this is an opportunity for the voters to speak out on this. I have no illusions that, particularly with the new maps that are every bit, if not more, gerrymandered than the old ones, that it's an uphill battle. And we need changes in the court system. But frankly, we need to change our law. We need to recognize that this is an archaic law that predated the Civil War. And weigh that against our basic freedoms. Weigh that against our ability to make our own health care decisions.
So you're banking on those constituent voices having an impact in November.
I certainly hope that those constituent voices will have an impact, and I urge constituents to get out there and vote, to vote your heart on this issue, to recognize that there are folks out there who are standing up for your basic freedom, and it's not the Republicans in the legislature.
Can I just add to
yes.
that? You know, I think that we have demonstrated as Americans that time and time again we have come together across race and class and geography and gender to fight for our democracy, to fight for our freedoms, and we've been successful. When people come together and mobilize around these core freedoms that the vast majority of people in our state support, we win. And we likely can't win all of the gerrymandered state legislative seats and elect reproductive freedom champions, but we can hold those legislators accountable. We can demand that they repeal that law during the special session. I mean, we have a solution that is before us right now. We don't have to go to court. And it is the legislature's inaction that we must hold them accountable for if they don't do something.
Planned Parenthood operates three of the four clinics in Wisconsin that still offer abortions. I know that they've said officially that they would stop if Roe would be overturned. What happens to those clinics? What do you understand they will be providing in the event that Roe is overturned?
Well, I'm not going to speak for Planned Parenthood, but from what I know, what the public statements they've made and what I know as a patient and a community leader and someone, a former staff person, Planned Parenthood is the reproductive health care provider for tens of thousands of people in the state of Wisconsin, and they will continue to provide that preventative care. And I am certain that they will do everything within their organization's power to make sure women have access to safe and legal care wherever they may need to go to get it. I know there are all kinds of other community-based organizations that are stepping in and making sure that women who feel that they need to travel and go somewhere where abortion is legal and safe can make it there. And this is really going to be a community effort where I think we get behind Planned Parenthood and make sure that their reproductive preventative care is supported, where we get behind organizations like the Women's Medical Fund that are raising money right now to make sure that women and families get the care they need.
Representative Subek, the Department of Health Services maternal mortality report says that 97% of maternal deaths could be prevented in Wisconsin. And they talk about things like expanding prenatal and postpartum care, also mental health supports, substance use. What sorts of supports need to be in place for mothers to make sure that more deaths don't happen?
Sure. So, you know, I think first and foremost, we need to expand Medicaid. We had an opportunity to bring in federal money to expand Medicaid. And among the governor's proposals to do with this money included expanding access to the very services that you just talked about for those most in need. I'm also a big proponent of home visitation services. There are some excellent programs that provide home visitation with new families from the time, in many cases, that somebody is pregnant through the time that their child is, you know, entering toddlerhood and entering the preschool.
Bipartisan agreement and funding, right? Do you think there's hope for that sort of support in the legislature?
You know, I never give up hope. I would say right now that hasn't happened. But, you know, using Medicaid as an example, because that would bring dollars into our state that could then be used to ensure that new families have access to the services and health care that they need. We've seen other states do it on a bipartisan basis. We have seen Republican states do it, states where their legislature and their governor are controlled by Republicans. It is only here in Wisconsin that this has become such a partisan issue. So I remain hopeful that we can get over that hump. Certainly, I am appealing to my Republican colleagues on the issue time and time again, and I think we don't give up until we get it done.
Nicole, as we round out our conversation here, what are your worst hopes or fears for what might happen next?
I think that we are at an inflection point in Wisconsin and in this country. And I think what we are seeing happening with the imminent reversal of Roe and abortion becoming illegal in over half the states in this country is a reflection of the coordinated effort we have seen over the last 30 years for right-wing activists to take over our institutions. And since 2020, we have seen this coordinated effort try to thwart the will of the people, to thwart the will of the people at the ballot box, to thwart the will of the people in the courtrooms, and to thwart the will of the people through mob violence. There is a connection here to banning abortion in 26 states and what we're seeing play out in the congressional hearings this week. My hope is that the vast majority of Wisconsinites and Americans see this and can come together. We don't have to agree about everything. We don't have to have the same policy solutions for every scenario, but we can come together and say there are basic things everyone in America deserves. The freedom to vote, the freedom to create your family, the freedom to go to school and be safe. These are basic, non-controversial things that have been thwarted by a coordinated and small effort that has been very effective. So when we come together, we can win.
Representative Subek, your hopes or worst fears with this pending decision?
You know, certainly I hope we don't get the decision that we expect. I mean, that's my biggest hope. Unfortunately, I do think that, you know, I fear that the reality is that Roe is on the crux of being overturned. And my hope is that we can find ways to ensure that we preserve people's freedom to make these decisions. I know it will be hard. I know it will be more costly. It will mean people having to travel. It will mean, certainly for those with means, that they will have access. For those without means, we need to be there for them. And we need to ensure that they have the money, the resources, and the places to go that they need to be able to access abortion care where it is still legal and available.
Thank you both so much for joining us for this conversation.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to watch both our programs with pro-life advocates and pro-choice advocates. And please be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.